Books on Tape presents The View from Mount Joy by Lorna Landvik, read by Robertson Dean. Prologue.
Good evening, caller. You're on the air with God.
What? I don't think that's funny.
Funny wasn't my intention.
But you're calling yourself God.
I don't know if you were listening carefully, caller. I said, you're on the air with God.
So am I.
God is everywhere. Therefore, you're on the air with him.
You're also on the earth with God, in the kitchen with him, in the tub with him. You're everywhere with God. Oh, I get you.
I'm glad. Now, do you have a question or comment?
Well, you're a woman. What do you think of these feminist nuts who refer to God as she? Laughter.
I think they're misguided. I think they're confused about their own identity and therefore about God's.
Well, that makes sense, I guess. Best of luck with your new show, and God bless.
Oh, he has, caller. He has.
My groan was as reflexive as a burp after a burrito. For the past week, a person couldn't listen to the radio without hearing an archival clip from On the Air with God, couldn't watch TV without an update on America's sexiest evangelist trumping coverage of slain baton twirlers or kidnapped flower girls.
Hello, caller. What can I do for you?
Have you ever read C.S. Lewis's Surprised by Joy?
Nope, just the Narnia books.
Well, if you get a chance, I really recommend it. The title comes from Mr. Lewis's reaction to God in his life. When God came into your life, were you surprised by joy?
I guess I was. Am. Because joy's not stagnant. It just keeps growing. Kind of like a mutant fruit. Like one of those 800-pound pumpkins you see at the state fair.
Oh, shut up, I said to the voice on the radio. I've heard just about enough of you. There was a party going on downstairs, one I'd happily return to. I'd better, I was the host. But I had escaped to my office to take a long, slow, and very necessary breather. The lights were off, and I didn't turn them on as I sat down on my creaky swivel chair. Electric guitar music jangled its way upstairs, and on top of it, like the descant part, laughter. Music and laughter. The celestial choir, as conducted by Bozo. Sure, I had had a glass or two, but I wasn't drunk on champagne so much as I was toasted, hammered, and plastered on the whole big wide world. I knew what it was like to be surprised by joy, and I also knew what it was like to be surprised by surprise. Hell, life is just one series of surprises when you think of it. Some elicit a small ooh or a smile, and some knock the wind right out of you. I myself have been breathless more times than I can count. Part 1. Chapter 1. Standing at the urinal, I read the first graffiti to mar the freshly scrubbed wall of the school bathroom. Vietnam sucks, and Christy Casey is a stone fox. In the fall of 1971, I was a senior, new to Old Bull High, and while I had formed judgments as to the former, I agreed the war did suck, I had no idea who Christy Casey was and whether or not she was a fox, stone or not. When I met her, it only took a nanosecond to realize, man, is she ever. From my perch on the top row of the football bleachers, I used to watch her and the other cheerleaders, their short pleated skirts fanning out as they sprang into the air, screaming at the bulls to go, fight, win, as if the continuation of human civilization depended on their victory. The late 60s still bled its influence into the early 70s, and many of us considered ourselves too hip in a mellow make-love-not-war way to look at those bouncing, pom-pom-punching, red-faced girls without thinking, man, are they pathetic. Except, of course, for Christy. Every time she tossed her dark blonde hair, cut in a shag like Jane Fonda's Include, every time she bent down to pull up a flagging crew sock, Every time she offered up a sly, dimpled smile, it was as if she'd handed us our own personal box of Cracker Jack with a special surprise inside. She was the kind of girl who could do uncool things, like act as secretary for the Future Farmers of America after school club, or solicit funds for UNICEF during lunch hour. She told me having a wide range of interests looked good on college applications, and the consensus would still be, wow. Darva Pratt was not part of the consensus, and in fact loathed Christy Casey and all that she stood for. "Look at her," said Darva, as if I needed prodding. It was during halftime, and as the marching band played the theme song to Hawaii 5-0, Christy kept time on a bass drum she had strapped over her shoulders. God forbid the band steal some of her spotlight. After they played the bridge, the band quieted, playing two notes over and over, as Christy began a rhythmic duel with the band's official bass drummer. She pounded out an uncomplicated beat, which the bass drummer answered. The crowd cheered, and then it was the drummer's turn. His was a more complicated rhythm, which Christy echoed, no problem. The crowd cheered again. This went on, the fans growing wilder as each drummer's challenge increased in speed and difficulty. Finally, Christy beat out a tempo so intricate, so tricky, that after a few beats, her challenger threw down his mallets and bowed deeply, his long furry hat practically sweeping the ground. Flashing her bright white smile, Christy held up her arms in victory as the crowd exploded, the drum major signaled, and the band played the last measures of the song at full volume. "Wow," I said after we had all sat down. "That girl can drum."
"Of course she can," said Darva. "She's our golden girl."
I laughed. "Jealous?" Now it was Darva's turn to laugh.
"Yes, it's my lifelong desire to be the wet dream of hundreds of high school boys."
"Language, Darva,"
I said, putting a little gasp of shock in my voice.
"Language."
The third quarter began, and we sat in the bleachers, warmed by the mild autumn sun, watching the game. Under a great bowlful of blue sky, the trees themselves cheered us on, waving their maroon and gold leaves in the breeze, and dislodging a squad of crows who cawed their cheers. It was as if all of nature was throwing a pep rally for a bunch of high school kids. I shut my eyes and raised my face to that solar warmth, but my respite lasted only a moment before Darva's sharp elbow found purchase in my lower ribs.
"Look at what your girlfriend's doing now."
Some schools are named after presidents or astronauts. Ours honored a 19th-century Norwegian violinist, and our mascot was a furry bull. I opened my eyes to see Christy chasing it along the sidelines. Darva made a tisking sound.
"When it comes to high school girls, I thought the bar was set pretty low, but man, she knocks it over."
"You're a high school girl."
"A status that will be changed tomorrow, when I hop a train to Sandusky, Ohio."
"What's in Sandusky?" Darva's eyes squinted behind her lavender-tinted glasses.
"Oh, sand. Some dusk."
Every day Darva made plans to escape to anywhere but here, sometimes to great and faraway cities, and other times to Podunk and its many counterparts. She claimed every hour spent in high school caused the death of a million innocent brain cells, and that she could no longer be a participant in their slaughter.
"Write me when you get there, okay?"
I said, nudging her shoulder with my own, and we watched as the Washburn Millers trounced the Bulls 37-6. A transfer student, I was grateful that Darva had befriended me the first day of school.
"What have you got?"
she asked, sliding her lunch tray onto the table as she sat across from me. "An infectious disease?" Looking around the empty table, I scratched my head.
"Yeah, malaria. I picked it up on leave in Da Nang."
The girl laughed.
"I personally like boys who've seen war before they've graduated high school. Gives them a certain maturity."
She pressed the edges of her milk carton apart and then forward, opening up a little spout.
"By the way, malaria is not contagious."
"What are you, Albert Schweitzer?"
"Darva Pratt," she said, holding up her milk carton.
"Joe Andreessen," I said, and clinked her carton with my own, toasting my first friend at Old Bull High. It was a friendship that would have consequences.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?